And hello, 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 and we are back, and you are listening to Waterfire Ignites Rhode Island here on AM 790, your station for talk and business. And boy, what a wonderful interview with Colonel Hugh Clemons. Just an incredible gentleman, and you know, they're celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Providence Police at Waterfire on August 9th. And again, we want to do a very special shout out to Tim Horan and National Grid, who without their support, that whole entire fire would not be possible. So thanks again for that. It's going to be a great night. The ballroom shall return in a night of celebration. But talking about celebration, it always makes me think of popping champagne for some reason. Doesn't it, Barnaby?
It does indeed. And that's an interesting subject to raise right now.
Yeah, and when I think of popping champagne, I think of this gentleman that we know, this very vivacious character who actually sabers champagne and did it at the last water fire, and that's you. I'm a very friendly and famous or infamous. I said, which one should I call you, Bob? But Bob Burke.
Robert Ignatius Loyola Burke.
All right. So what's the whole
Bonjour.
Full name?
Yeah. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Yes.
Robert Ignatius Loyola Burke. Yeah.
Yes. All right. But can we call you Bob just to keep it short?
I would. Yeah, I think that's a lot easier.
The owner of
Boring.
Which, just for a moment, let's talk about Pot au Feu.
The co-owner of Pot au Feu with my wife Annie, who
Absolutely.
You know well,
who
my
I
beautiful
also
wife.
Know.
So,
the co-owner of Pot au Feu, which is a really wonderful restaurant. I was there just the other night, and you know, this classic French cuisine done perfectly, directly under the gaze of Julia Child.
The only place people could see, we have this wonderful photograph of Julia Child on the stairs. It's the only place in the world they can see it, because it was from the book signing of her major work, her major opus, The Way to Cook, in 1989. And we were we cooked crepes for 600 people.
Yeah,
Julia says, oh, I wanted something easy. We're thinking, what, compared to a rack of lamb?
Yeah.
I mean, and we did a demo beforehand. She flips the crepe in the air. It lands on her forearm.
So she catches it on her forearm, yeah.
Benjamin, the great photographer from the Providence Journal, snapped it, got it. Well, about a year ago, Mike Delaney, the photo editor at the Journal, finally relented and gave us a copy. Mm-hmm. And he said, you can't sell it. You can't do anything other than make a print and hang it in the restaurant. But when you come down the stairs, you see this wonderful picture, Julia, in that moment, as only she could do it.
Yeah.
The crepe is hanging off her forearm. And I can tell you the fun part of it was, is that the minute it happened, she immediately went, oh! And threw it in the pan and kept going like nothing had happened.
Now that's a true show business lady, you know?
Absolutely.
Vintage Julia. And
yeah,
so we're under her gaze, and we know it, and we're careful about it.
How did you meet her?
Actually, Annie and I had gone to Paris. It was 1987. We had owned the restaurant for a year. Annie had started there in 1980 as a server, and rose through the ranks to general manager. And then we bought it in 86. And we thought, gosh, we got to get to Paris, see what's going on with the food scene. Off we go. Well, while we're in Paris, Julia comes in to have lunch. And we were calling into the restaurant on these big old pay phones. There were
right.
no calling cards.
Absolutely.
There was no,
absolutely
you know, anything.
Yeah.
And Annie's standing there pumping 5-franc coins into this giant box, which is devouring them because
right.
it's transatlantic.
Of course, yeah.
We get our manager on the phone, and she says, you'll never believe who's having lunch here. And I said, I don't care. Is everything okay? You know, I just want to know, is the restaurant okay? Finally, she blurts out that Julia Child's having lunch at the restaurant. And Annie drops the coins on the floor. The line goes dead. I mean, we were despondent. Here we were. The one time in our lives Julia might show up at the restaurant. We're in Paris.
Of course.
Well, she was so gracious. She loved it. She autographed people's
yeah.
menus. And she
mm-hmm.
was just, well, about a month after we got back, we got an invitation. She had said to the manager and the chef, you know, where are the owners? You know, she said, well, they're in Paris trying to, you know,
getting
learn
ingredients.
More.
Trying to meet you.
And she says, why, that's just where they ought to be, you know. And about a month later, we got an invitation to go to Boston and meet her at Maison Robert.
Yeah.
And
right.
she was just delightful. And that became a series of times that she came to. We actually got to go up one time and have dinner at her house in Cambridge, which was just amazing. So
she was so much fun.
She's a guardian angel.
I received an honorary doctorate from Brown University the same year that she received an honorary doctorate from Brown University. And that was a great adventure, meeting with her in the morning and all the discussions and all the dinners. And I think Jacques Pepin lit Waterfire that night because she didn't want to get on the boat.
Yeah, well, they are two of the great. You know, when we look today in the restaurant business for examples of people who truly, Jacques Pepin, who's also been a friend of the restaurant and just a wonderful, wonderful man to meet. And I've actually played croquet with him, which is really, really, he's just a delightful guy. But, you know, they set this bar so high. And they didn't set it in a way that, like, Martha Stewart sets it. You know, Martha wants you to jump over it like you're in a dog and pony show, and she wants you to hit the bar and fail. And both Jacques Pepin and Julia Child just want you to succeed. You know, they just
enjoy it.
Exactly.
And absolutely enjoy it and be in the moment.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that excitement. Well, you know, I've had some amazing meals, you know, at Padova, and I thank you for those, and I encourage people to go visit them. But there was a recently, just 2 days ago, was Bastille Day, and we had Waterfire 2 days before that on July 12th. And we've often honored Bastille Day for maybe 10 years now with appropriate music and special things and things like that. But we were so pleased to take it up a few notches the other day. So it looked like you were enjoying yourselves.
I was faking it. I can't tell you when I have had more fun than Waterfire. I mean, what an event. It's just, and you know, for people to be out in the middle of that basin.
Yeah. And I remember you were out there with some commissioner from Buenos Aires, wasn't it? About 2 years.
You were in Singapore.
I was in Singapore that night. Angry.
That was actually a funny moment because I said to the cultural attaché who was in, I said, watch this. Barnaby's going to answer his phone. And he said, how do you know that? And I had pressed your number on my phone, and you pulled yours. And he goes, how did you make that? But it was the idea. But that's the thing about Waterfire.
That was all the way around the globe. We could not have been further away.
And it's that international flavor. But to be in the middle of that basin and see the legions of people who are coming out for this event.
All smiling.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's just such a wonderful, wonderful creation. I mean, Barnaby, you know, I've said for years, you are the new Christo. You are the artist who, more than anybody else, and so much more than Christo. Christo does these visual kinds of things that are impressive as a visual.
Very intriguing, but they're an art statement. Yeah.
But what you do is you really reach into people's hearts with your art, between the fire, the water, the music, the camaraderie, the sense of community that Waterfire creates in the city of Providence is just absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. I've never experienced anything like it anywhere else.
And it's important there that everyone feel a part of it, that we... I think you've said this before, that there really aren't any spectators. Everyone's part of the event. They're involved and they're engaged with it. That's
We're
the
all
responsive, you see. Everyone's participants. Mm-hmm. And so for Bastille Day, you did something that we'll probably go into the next segment because we've only got a few minutes.
We've got to take a quick break. But you did something pretty amazing. I want to talk about how you actually do this.
Yeah, we'll get to that in the next
segment.
I could
tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
But I do want to encourage people to take a look at the podcast we do in this show, which is waterfire.org/radio. And this is show number 5, where you will find this. But you also find a lot of other resources and some pictures of what we're about to talk about.
Hello, 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 and we are back, and you are listening to Waterfire Ignites Rhode Island, and we are just having such a good time here with our favorite French restaurant proprietor, amongst many other things, Bob Burke. Thank you, Bob, for being here.
I'm delighted. Thank you.
Yeah, and I know that you and Barnaby are going to talk a little bit again about what you did at Waterfire last Saturday, but I'm just going to throw this in there because we were talking about it at the break. Anyone out there who did not see Bob's recipe for We're going to call it the Johnny Bobby cake. But it's a Johnny cake that Bob Burke has made, and it's in bacon fat, and it's with coffee syrup. Go to the road show. Check it out. Unbelievable. So thanks for the recipe, Bob, but now back to Waterfire stuff.
Well, my pleasure. On July 12th, which was the Saturday closest to July 14th, which is, of course, the French national holiday of Bastille Day, we have always done a series of songs, and we had wanted to bring it up a little bigger this year because the French are rebuilding the historical vessel that Rochambeau and Lafayette used to come from France over to more or less save the American Revolution. They came in, Bob and I were talking yesterday, this was really like the Normandy landing, and they came in and brought troops and reinforcements, and this was in 1771, I think. Should I get the exact time? And
No. 81. Would have been...
1781. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Because okay. Ben Franklin was over in France trying to convince Lafayette to join forces with us because the British were his enemy also.
Exactly.
And you're right. This really is the Normandy landing of the Revolutionary War.
The American Revolutionary War. We needed their support. We needed their help. We were outnumbered. And he landed in Newport, and then he came up to Providence. And he lived, the encampment was here in Providence for over a year. And hence we have both Camp Street and Rochambeau Avenue. And he had a hospital at Brown University, and for a long time they prepared for the various assaults that allowed us to become the nation we are.
Yeah, so, I don't think Brown University Med School is even aware that the heritage of they actually used University Hall, which is where the president's office is now, is the oldest building on Brown University.
Absolutely.
And they used that as the infirmary for the most severely wounded of the French soldiers from the Revolutionary battles.
Yep. You know, there's so much history in Providence, and we like to bring it to the surface in interesting ways that we do with the Gatsby, and we're working on some stuff with Rochambeau as well, working with the Alliance Française and the French Council, and we're hoping that next year, around Bastille Day, this restored vessel will be here in Providence, and we're working on that now. But as part of our preparation for that, we worked with the Alliance Française, and we had Bob Burke and the French Council come down, and on July 12th, 3 days ago, we, as part of the going up the river, we rechristened our boat Athena to be Marianne, who is the personification of liberty leading the people. And on that boat, we had yourself, Bob Burke, and Marguerite Bouteau, and André King from the city of Brest. And you were cradling in your arm a bottle of two magnums of Moët Chandon, and you had a large saber. And so tell me about the Napoleonic tradition of sabering champagne.
Well, this goes back, and when people see this, sometimes they think it's a little trick where I'm knocking the cork out of the bottle. But the wire basket stays firmly in place on it.
Right on the glass.
And it's an actual decapitation. We sliced the glass. And I was inducted in 1990, becoming one of the first of six North Americans at that time who had been inducted into this previously exclusively French Club des Sabreurs, Moët de Chandon. And coincidentally, Julia Child was also inducted at that time.
Very good.
And it goes back to Moët, Jean-Rémy Moët, knowing that celebrity would help sell his product. And he invited Napoleon and Josephine, as the two most famous people in the world, up to enjoy the champagnes. Of course, you can't tell the kids, hey, you got to move out of your bedroom. The emperor's going to stay. You know, you got to build him a palace. So he built him a palace, a lot like the Newport Mansions, called Trianon. And Annie and I had dinner there one night. And just amazing to realize that this was done so they could have a dinner.
Yeah.
And while he was being guarded, so many people wanted to kill Napoleon, and while he was being guarded, his elite corps of swordsmen, at the end of their shift, they would get their daily ration of grog, which meant they'd get a bottle of champagne. They didn't like messing with the cork any more than any of us do. Next thing you know, sacre bleu, out comes the saber, and zack, you know, off goes the top of the bottle. Champagne sprays everywhere. And this is the foundation of the Moët Chandon Club des Sabreurs. So I continue the tradition to this day, and we do it for people at the restaurant. If somebody's got an anniversary or birthday, they can come down, and I'm more than happy to saber a bottle of champagne for them. We, of course, do it for a lot of weddings and, you know, rehearsal dinners, corporate events, celebrations. So
it's impressive.
It's a grand tradition, and, Bob, you do it with great theater and verve and daring. It's not undangerous. You're in the front line there. And
bottles under 100 pounds of pressure. So you can imagine your car tires under about 32 pounds of pressure. If you can imagine with your face 6 inches from it when it blows out. But I can tell you, Barnaby, I don't think I have ever in my life had more fun sabering a bottle, actually two bottles of champagne, out there in the water fire basin with the flames flying. I looked like I was at the gates of hell. I looked at the video and I thought, oh my God. Yeah. But it could not have been more fun. By far the largest live audience that I have ever sabered before.
Well, as we came up, the Alliance Française was ready to sing, and we started to sing the La Marseillaise, and everyone was singing along with it, and then you came up, and right to the beat of the music, you sabered off the champagne. And when this happens, it creates a great fountain of foam and champagne. It must have gone 25 feet in the air.
Yeah, it goes about 2 to 3 stories in the air.
Do you ever feel like you're wasting too much champagne?
You know, and people ask that question often, and I say, is there a bottle of champagne you will ever remember more than this one? Of all the dozens or hundreds of bottles of champagne you may have drank in your life, this is the one
you're going to remember.
You will remember.
Absolutely.
And it
tastes the best after seeing that. Absolutely.
Billions of people have had sips of billions of glasses of champagne, sir. It never tastes better than it does from the sabered bottle. And there's a relative handful of people who have ever done that. And Barnaby, we didn't connect with you at the end of it the other day, which means we're going to have to come back and saber another bottle and make sure you get a glass of it.
A year from now, we're going to do it again.
You know, I Googled this, and it said that Napoleon has been known to have said that champagne, in victory one deserves it, and in defeat one needs it. So that's
absolument. Vraiment. It's absolutely true. Well, and my favorite champagne quote is from actually Dom Perignon, who is a blind monk, who was the creator of champagne.
Absolutely, I remember it.
Even though he was blind, when he tasted it, he said, "I have tasted the stars."
Absolutely.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's even
better than Brie Sèvres. Mm. So, but yeah, it was a wonderful tradition, and our French guests were overjoyed and delighted, and the Alliance Française was there to sing. Our honorary consul Began was there, and Began had a great time as well. And it's something we want to build towards for next year to do even better and invite everyone back.
Well, I think it's important for people to realize everybody thinks that Rhode Island's a quote unquote Italian state. There are almost equal numbers of people from Italian, French, and Irish heritage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it really is something where we really want to encourage people to celebrate their French heritage, whether through Canada or directly from France. But this was a wonderful event to highlight that, also highlight the great history and this sort of hands across the water. So it's a special relationship, and thank you so much for doing what you did.
Thank
people,
you
people
for
can see that if they go on the website waterfire.org/radio, and it's show number 5. We'll have some video of that, which we'd recommend people take a look at. Thank you so much, Bob.
Merci.
So again, I want to thank everybody for joining us and listening at AM 790, your station for talk and business. We enjoy every Wednesday with you, and we hope that you'll be back with us next Wednesday and hear a little bit more about an incredible fire happening on July 26th. Rhode Island defeats hepatitis C.